This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll chat with actors Lance Gross and Lil Mama about their new TV One original movie entitled When Love Kills. And Jessica Rosegard returns with our monthly conversation with Cityscapes columnist Richard Campanella. Then we'll tell you all about a food hopping shop happening today at Canal Place. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us.
Ma, I'm leaving, and she needs a bottle.
Fine, Felicia.
I'll watch your baby,
so she don't end up like you.
Baby, you're one of the baddest chicks in the game.
Somebody at the club say you be tricking girls.
All I do is manage their money. I was thinking about putting you in charge of the girls.
Me?
Like Bonnie and Clyde.
TV One will soon premiere its new original movie entitled When Love Kills, based on the story and life of Felicia Blakely, a young woman who gets caught up with the wrong man and who leads her down the dangerous path. Joining me now are the film's leading actors, Lil Mama and Lance Gross. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Lil Mama, it's not just your lip gloss that's popping on this film. Tell us about your character, Felicia Blakely.
Oh, it's all popping. Felicia Blakely is a young woman who at the age of 16, she gets turned on to exotic dancing. In this film, we display her, you know, going to the club with her friends. And they like, girl, you should strip. You can make some good money. And I think that, you know, it's not such an exciting thing for her in the beginning, but she is desperate to come up and you know, and have a great life. And as time goes on, she becomes a young mom because she meets someone at the club who she falls in love with. She becomes a teen mom. And then that doesn't work out. And as time goes on, she meets someone who's 11 years her senior. And in her eyes, this is the love of her life. As time goes on in that relationship, she learns that he is a pimp slash predator, played by Mr. Lance Gross himself. And the story pretty much spirals out from there.
Now, you know, I've heard this word pimp thrown around far too many times. A lot of gentlemen like to use the word manager. So Lance, you play the role of this manager, Dino. I'm curious to know what or who helped you tap into that character.
Well, if I have to describe Dino in one word, it would be diabolical. It's crazy because this is a role that I've never played. Never even had the opportunity to play a role like this. But, you know, when I read it, it moved off the page for me. You know, I jumped at it. I was nervous about it. But I knew that if I took on this role, I would have to put my best foot forward. So I'm originally from East Oakland, California, by way of Las Vegas.
Okay.
So I grew up with people like this. And, you know, I reached out to people that I knew that were connected. I call them P's, that were connected to this lifestyle from Oakland, from Vegas, Houston. And I spent a lot of time on the phone with these people, you know what I mean? And I couldn't reach out to the guy I was portraying. You know, I had no means of getting in contact with him. So, you know, I just made a point of just having these conversations, just trying to get into their head. That's the great thing about acting. We're detectives, and the studying part, that's the part that I really love, you know. So I knew if I took on this role, I had to make it authentic. I wanted people, if they knew that lifestyle, be able to look at me up on that screen and say, you know what? That's what it is. Because there's different kind of pimping. There's guerrilla pimping. There's pimps that are unassuming that you would never know. But, you know, they have a way with words, and they have a way of making a girl love them, making a girl trust them.
What about for you, Lil Mama? Because you're still fairly new to the movie screen. Your last movie was TLC's Crazy Sexy Cool.
Yes.
But, you know, this is not Lisa Left Eye Lopez. These are two different roles. How did you tap into it?
Well, just like Detective L. Boogie over here, I did my research, and we spent a lot of time at the strip club in Atlanta right before we filmed. And I also spent some time at the strip club in New York. Like, my friends would always go out because that's where they like to go, you know. But I thought that it would be a great time for me to go and just understand how the women work together. It's really interesting when you get a chance to see how these women interact with each other on a day-to-day basis. It can be a very cutthroat thing, but at the same time, there's also this very comfortable energy that they have with one another, and loving energy. Everybody's just trying to make their paper. So it's like I had to get in that mindset for a certain part of the film. Mm-hmm. And then it was easy for me to be nervous and uncomfortable with it in the beginning part of the film, because that's how I am. I can be very shy in that department. I can be very aggressive with my language and playful, but I think I'm a very reserved person in the sexual area, if you will. And so I had to open up in a lot of ways. I had to become comfortable with my body on film because I had to play an exotic dancer and they don't wear too much clothing. I was lucky that it was a TV movie because it wasn't so extreme as it could have been. But also tapping into a space where I had to be really vulnerable and soft and not as outspoken as I would be, or to fight back for myself or stand up for myself. And I got a chance to experience what women feel like when they're in that situation or what they may be going through.
Yeah.
It was tough. A lot of days were very emotionally draining. And I was lucky to have such an amazing co-star in Lance Gross, because when we weren't on set filming and had to be in character where he had to take advantage and not really care so much about my character, when we were off screen, he would care for me and let me know, mm-hmm. you know, hey, I'm looking out for you. I'm here for you if you need help with anything. You know, let me know if I can do anything better, or, you know, if you need more energy and things like that. That made it helpful, but it was still a very emotionally draining process in filming this movie.
Now, Tasha Smith is debuting as the movie's director. How was that experience working with her?
Oh, man, that was awesome. I mean, I've known Tasha for years. She's been an acting coach of mine for years. So there was a certain type of trust that I had with her that I have never had with directors that I worked with in the past. Like I said, this was something new for me, but I knew that under her direction, I was going to be good. And Tasha is just such a talented, beautiful soul. I mean, she will brighten up any room. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So just having that energy, it's a good energy to have when you're on set. So it made the job that much easier to do.
And again, this movie is based on a true story.
Most definitely.
And many women are in this very situation right now.
Yeah.
What are you hoping to see viewers take away from this film?
As a collective, as a cast and the director, Tasha Smith and myself, Lance, and also Tammy Roman, we've been discussing just like our perspectives on it. You know, Lance being a dad, Tammy being a mom, myself, I don't have any children yet, but being a young woman, and like I'm 28 and Felicia Blakely is now 34. I couldn't imagine myself in 6 years, you know, spending the rest of my life in prison, or from 19 up until now still. Like, that's a very hurtful and mind-boggling experience for me to even think about. So it's like, we want to prevent young women from ending up in these situations. We want families to take a movie like this serious and watch it as a group and have the discussion. Like, open these conversations up. Don't allow social media and people on the outside to tell your children about exotic dancing, which is a gateway to drugs, to prostitution, to robbery, mm-hmm. and in this case, murder as well. You know, so I think it's just important for us to open the conversation, because Lance's character is, he's a handsome person. So when you see, when you think danger, you think of this ugly big guy or pimp that's dressed, draped in all these different colors with glasses and hats and jewelry. And, you know, we think the extreme. But like you said, there's guys saying, hey, I'm a manager. And Lance's character will always say, like, you know, I'm a manager. And it's like, it's so easy to get caught up in a situation like this where you think this guy's your dude or you riding for somebody, and then all of a sudden you're caught in a situation where you have no control.
Yeah.
We want to help prevent that by showing it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's also an opportunity for women who might be going through situations like this to kind of step outside of their situation. Sometimes you can be blinded by love and all that, and they could be in this situation, but if they're able to see it, you know, they can recognize it, like, well, wow, I'm going down this road. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So this is an opportunity for them to see it and recognize it and change up their situation. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the way Felicia Blakely's story ended, well, it's not even over, but I mean, her life as a free woman is over. Mm-hmm. You know, she just made the wrong choices.
Yeah.
And remember, we watched the documentaries that Tasha was showing us. These were real pimps and real hoes, and how much they loved him, right?
Yeah.
Like, how, like, they would forgive him. It wasn't a matter of them feeling like victims. Like, if they got in trouble, they were like, yeah, well, I see what I did wrong, and, you know, I got to just do right, because, you know, daddy is, and they call him daddy, and they look to him for protection, direction,
it's
love,
mental,
support.
Mental manipulation.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Now, aside from the movie, guys, I know you aren't strangers to New Orleans. What's some of your favorite spots when you hit the city?
Oh, man. New Orleans is, like, one of my favorite cities. Of course, I love being here for Essence Festival. But beyond that, I mean, it's just a great city with so much culture. Some of my favorite places are Preservation Hall for music. Mm-hmm. I'm a food dude. I'm a fat kid.
Me too. I'm a foodie too. Yeah, I'm not a fat kid.
Surrey for breakfast. Deanie's, Dookie Chase.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So you know where to go.
Oh yeah.
All right. What about
you,
little mama?
My times in and out of the city was very brief. I came in to speak to the youth that I think like a junior high school, and then a high school, and another junior high school. And I would come in, and they would order food, of course, feed us like, but it wasn't really like New Orleans. I see Lance come, like he comes to New Orleans all the time for Essence Festival. A few of my other friends, they come out here and I see they had such a great time. So the last Essence Festival, I was here. So I just was here and I had a great time. But I want to go to a few food places so that me and Lance could compete.
You know what? I'm going to help her out on
you
that.
You know, who knows the best place?
If he doesn't help you, I got you.
Okay.
Little Mama Lance Gross, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
When Love Kills premieres on TV One Monday, August 28th at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central. Each month, we catch up with Richard Campanella to discuss his Cityscapes column for NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. WWNO's Jessica Rosegard brings us this conversation about how the former Jefferson City became part of New Orleans.
So, Richard, last month we talked about the annexation of Lafayette into New Orleans. We're moving on now to Jefferson City. How and where did Jefferson City form?
Jefferson City was an incorporated municipality in Jefferson Parish that coincides with what most people perceive to be present-day uptown New Orleans. It went from Toledano Street over to Lower Line Street and from the riverfront back to the New Basin Canal.
How did that area develop?
What became Jefferson City comprised 10 colonial-era and antebellum-era plantations that, just like most of these other areas, were left up to the individual decisions of the planter families to go ahead and decide to hire a surveyor and lay out a street grid. Lafayette, which is now the Garden District, Irish Channel, and Central City, incorporated starting in 1833. So people living in this next tier of developed subdivisions looked to Lafayette, and they wanted to kind of incorporate their own entity as well so that they would have a voice in government rather than being in an unincorporated area within Jefferson Parish. So in 1846, they got state approval to form the borough of Freeport. Why Freeport? Well, there was a plan to allow for almost tax-free dockage there, which puts in the notion of this new entity wanting to compete with the Port of New Orleans. And so you start to see a little bit of tension to grow between these areas. 4 years later, the borough of Freeport is dissolved and replaced by the city of Jefferson. And so from 1850 up to 1870, we have a separate incorporated city with its own city government. The downtown area, if you will, would have been at the Magazine and Napoleon intersection. Mm-hmm. And if you just picture that there, there's those parks, there's St. Stephen's, there's a police station, there's the old market there, it was rebuilt afterwards, but it's called the Jefferson Market. And when you walk around there, you get a sense that I'm in the downtown of what used to be a small city.
What was life like in Jefferson City? What kind of people lived there and what kind of industry did they have?
The biggest industry was related to the arrival and the slaughtering and processing of animals. Cattle, pigs, sheep, these were arriving from the upcountry on flatboats for the most part. They were unloaded, and the abattoirs at the time, the butchers, had a cherished legal right at that time to disperse their operations citywide. This allowed them to keep the meat fresh and slaughter just as supply and demand kind of met each other. Aside from this, there were port activities. There was also quite a bit of market gardening. Just because the streets were laid out in Jefferson doesn't mean that they were all populated with houses. And so you had opportunities for truck farming, what we would call today urban agriculture. And it was quite lucrative because they would sell to the municipal, to the downtown markets.
You mentioned an economic impact from the slaughterhouses. But what was the greater economy like in Jefferson City as compared to New Orleans?
So during and right after the Civil War, New Orleans proper went into something of an economic downturn. But Jefferson did surprisingly well. There was increased demand for lumber. There was new construction going on everywhere in Jefferson. Why? Because wealthier people starting to move out of New Orleans and essentially suburbanizing. And so Jefferson comes up with a plan, a very ambitious plan, to increasingly compete with New Orleans. So how do you do this in this era? You do it by improving transportation infrastructure. They come up with this amazing plan they call the Ship Island Canal, which essentially would have been kind of like the New Basin Canal, a canal cut through the back swamp connecting Jefferson with like Pontchartrain, such that vessels could go straight out into the Gulf of Mexico through Ship Island, which would have been kind of a transshipment point. And they were going to connect this with railroads and shell roads throughout Jefferson. So this leaves New Orleans increasingly skittish that if it's going to make its move and annex Jefferson, it wants to do so before Jefferson starts to get develop all this infrastructure and get into debt, which means that debt would be subsumed by New Orleans. What eventually creates the groundwork for the annexation is some of these background economic matters, but more specifically, contentious post-Civil War Reconstruction era politics.
There were different feelings about the Civil War between residents of New Orleans and residents of Jefferson City, right?
By the late 1860s, what you had in Jefferson was a more white, more democratic, a population that was more sympathetic to the Confederacy a few years prior. What you had on the New Orleans side was a government that was more aligned with the federally backed Reconstruction era government that controlled the state, namely Governor Warmoth. So the opportunity arises in an 1870 state act in state legislature to rework New Orleans charter. By March of 1870, Jefferson City ceases to exist and it becomes New Orleans to this day, its 12th, 13th, and 14th ward.
You mentioned the annexation of Lafayette was friendly. This was not such a friendly, you even said that it was a hostile, more like a hostile takeover.
When Jefferson City was annexed, it was highly controversial. Jeffersonians worried about increasing taxes and taking on the debt of Orleans. They worried about losing their identity and their political power, since now they would be going from controlling their own destiny to being a tiny part of a much bigger city.
Jefferson City, the 12th, 13th and 14th ward of present-day New Orleans. What parts of Jefferson City remain that you can see today?
Well, for one thing, the street grid all around us and probably a few thousand structures date from Jefferson City times. If you look at places like the Valence Street Cemetery and some of those cemeteries around Ferret, those were Jefferson City cemeteries. If you go to that main sort of downtown intersection around Magazine and Napoleon, St. Stephen's Church, which whose very beginning just predates the end of Jefferson, was the main uptown Catholic church. The police station is from 1896, but it's in the same location. If you look right next to the police station, you'll see a big beige building that I think now is St. George Episcopal Gymnasium or something like that. Look on the top and it says Jefferson Market, 1917. Now, clearly 1917 is, 47 years after the end of Jefferson, but there's the term Jefferson Market. So that identity remains. So we have all sorts of these vestiges, and probably the most festive one is the Jefferson City Buzzards. And so when you see them marching next Mardi Gras, they actually date from 1890, but they named it in salute to the childhood home of most of the founding members.
Richard Campanella, geographer at the Tulane School of Architecture. When Jefferson City became New Orleans, and we can look forward to learning about when Algiers became New Orleans next, right?
And Carrollton after that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Richard Campanella is a professor of geography at the Tulane School of Architecture. His Cityscapes column can be found every month on NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. The Shops at Canal Place, in partnership with the New Orleans Chamber, is hosting Summertime Blues. The Food Hop and Shop event benefits Team Gleason, which creates a global conversation about ALS with hopes to someday find a cure. Joining me now to talk more about the event is Lisa Manzella, General Manager for the Shops at Canal Place. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start by talking about the influence behind this event.
Sure. The Shops at Canal Place, we're dedicated to creating these types of experiences for members of the New Orleans community. So by us offering this type of event, it's allowing us to not only bring members of the community together, it's benefiting a great cause. It's allowing the shops to introduce our stores to the community again.
So you guys are bringing blues, brews, and barbecue to the shops today. What can folks expect if they come out to Canal Place?
Well, the event starts at 5:30. It'll be from 5:30 until 8 o'clock. We're going to have live music by Colin Lake, complimentary beer from Urban South Brewery. We're going to have an incredible food truck lineup that includes French Cheese, Food Drunk, Diva Dog, Grilling Shilling, an ice cream by Dat Ice Roll, which we're excited about. So guests will be able to experience all those offerings this evening, along with an incredible raffle that we'll have on display that includes items donated by stores within the shops at Canal Place. All proceeds from this raffle will benefit Team Gleason, and we have a great assortment of items that will be available for raffle.
Now, you mentioned that those proceeds benefit Team Gleason. Let's talk about the ways this event helps bring awareness to ALS.
Absolutely. For most of us, Steve Gleason is near and dear to our heart.
Yeah.
He is an enormous figure in our community and making great strides in ultimately finding a solution to end this disease, but currently raising public awareness towards ALS. And we feel, and this is with really several nonprofits, we feel it's important to partner with these nonprofits to generate additional awareness of the efforts that they are making to improve awareness of their disease or illness that they're trying to reach out to the community on. So we're partnering with Team Gleason to allow them, along with our assistants, to bring that exposure to the community this evening.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk more about this partnership between the shops at Canal Place and the New Orleans Chamber. In regards to bringing professionals and business people of all ages together to fight such a meaningful cause.
Well, the New Orleans Chamber has a great young professionals organization, and we were excited to partner with them to get those young professionals to the shops, again, to experience and to support Team Gleason, but also to have them at the shops to experience what the shops has to offer to the community as well. So we're excited to get that young crowd here, certainly not limited to just the young professionals. Everyone is invited. But by partnering with New Orleans Chamber, collectively, we are allowed to broaden our efforts in bringing this information to the community, specifically the information in support of Team Gleason.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about the community work that you guys do. How does the Shops at Canal Place benefit the community?
We're very committed to increasing our offerings to the community through these events that we love to host. So if there's a nonprofit out there who feels that the fit is a good fit for both the shops and that organization, we're happy to talk to them about putting on these types of events to benefit their nonprofit. Canal Place is in a great location. Everyone knows where it's located at the foot of Canal Street. It's easy to get to, and it's an awesome opportunity for the community to come together.
That was Lisa Manzella, General Manager of the Shops at Canal Place. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
The Summertime Blues Food Hop and Shop is happening today at Canal Place, 5:30 to 8 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows And be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.